Hello, political learners. Welcome to the Weekly Poll Show. My name is Tobias Sika. I'm a fourth-year Bishop's graduating student doing a double major in political science and German as a foreign language, and I will be your host for this show. After almost a year since the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen tasked Mario Draghi, the European Central Bank's former president and former Italian Prime Minister, with investigating Europe's economic woes and problems, Draghi, famously known for his whatever it takes stance in 2012 amidst the Eurozone crisis, released last September 9th a 400-page report on the future of European competitiveness. What does this report contain? What does it call for? And how has it been received? All of this and much more in this week's episode of the Weekly Poll Show. In Draghi's own terms, the Future of European Competitiveness report is a radical proposal. The author calls to unite and act now, or face, in his harsh words, a slow and agonizing death. This is an existential challenge, says the European statement, warning the European Union that it faces lasting sluggish economic growth, which could end up threatening European prosperity and social welfare. But it's not all bad. The EU has created a single market of 440 million consumers and 23 million companies, accounting for roughly 17% of global GDP. Furthermore, 8 of the world's top 10 countries for the rule of law are EU members. Europe even leads the US and China in life expectancy and infant mortality rates. So what is Europe's main problem, according to the former Italian Prime Minister? Weak productivity, particularly in comparison with the US due to the weakness of the EU's high-tech industry. The European economy has actually performed just as well as the US, outside of high-tech sectors, information technology, and communications. But productivity in these sectors has stagnated since the 2008 global financial crisis. And, according to the report, this productivity gap accounts for 72% of the overall gap in GDP per capita that's opened up between America and the EU in the last 15 years. European information and tech companies are caught in a middle tech trap. This means that most large EU companies are in the middle tech sector and remain languishing there because they do not want to leave the field they know. The EU's share of global tech revenues fell from 22% in 2013 to 18% in 2023, while the US share increased from 30% to 38% in those respective years. In the last 5 decades, no EU company worth more than 100 billion euros has been created from scratch, while the US has created tens of companies above this threshold, as well as 6 with an evaluation of over a trillion euros, all in tech. And 30% of Europe's so-called unicorns, privately held startup companies valued at more than $1 billion, American dollars, have left the bloc since 2008. Because they simply could not scale up on the old continent. Innovative digital companies in Europe are simply struggling to scale and secure funding, especially compared to the US. The problem is not that Europe lacks idea or ambition, but that innovation is blocked at the next stage. We are failing to translate innovation into commercialization, says Draghi. This declaration can be backed by the gap in later stage financing, where US venture capital investment, that is, capital invested in a project in which there is a substantial element of risk, typically within a new or expanding business, is 5 times higher than in Europe across all development stages. You are hearing the Weekly Poll Show with Tobias Sika. And this week's episode is on Mario Draghi's report on the future of European competitiveness. So what does the former European Central Bank president highlight in the report as solution avenues to progressively and swiftly adopt? To begin with, Draghi highlights three ways to reignite growth. First, closing the innovation gap with the US and China in key technologies. Draghi recommends abandoning such sectors where China's cost advantage is too big. He furthermore suggests tariffs to defend domestic producers, and, if China moves to invest in Europe, advancing in measures to enforce a transfer of technology. Yet the EU must avoid the pitfall of protectionism, and should not impose tariffs systematically, but on a case-by-case basis. Second, a joint decarbonization and competitiveness plan. The EU's bold decarbonization goals bring some short-term costs that others, like China and the US, simply do not face. Yet, according to a former ECB president, decarbonization isn't just a cost. It is a massive opportunity for Europe to slash energy prices, lead in clean technologies, and boost energy security. And, remarkably, Europe has some natural advantages in green energy, such as solar in the south and wind in the north and southeast, to give it a competitive edge. Third, securing supply chains from geopolitical dependencies. Draghi also said the bloc must continue to reduce its economic dependencies to increase its internal security, warning that Europe is particularly dependent on a handful of suppliers for critical raw material and digital technology. In fact, 40% of critical raw materials and advancement tech imports in the EU come from a few suppliers, half of which are not geopolitically aligned with the EU. He argues that diversifying supply chains should reduce economic uncertainty and vulnerability, which would in turn facilitate greater investment and therefore end up being a net positive for the European economy. These three highlights are clear, but what exactly does Draghi mean when he intends to close the innovation gap, have a joint decarbonization and competitiveness plan, and securing supply chains from geopolitical dependencies? Well, we can extrapolate three concrete set of measures to be taken. Firstly, the EU should reduce geopolitical vulnerabilities. Draghi suggests the EU to swiftly implement the Critical Raw Material Act, establish joint purchasing, and develop a supply chain strategy while also accelerating mining, recycling, and innovation in alternative materials. In terms of defense, without common European spending, the EU should increase joint procurement amongst member states. Secondly, industrial, competition, and trade policies should align to ensure that they work together as part of a coherent strategy, with a focus on supporting sectors rather than individual companies, calling for a genuine EU foreign economic policy to replace the patchwork of national industrial strategies currently emerging in Europe, cutting red tape and making the bloc's decision-making rules more efficient will allow it to act more quickly, the report said. Europe does not coordinate where it matters, and Europe's decision-making rules have not substantially evolved as the EU has enlarged and the global environment we face has become more hostile and complex, maintains Draghi. Moreover, the author proposes making EU funding more targeted, creating an EU capital markets union, increasing budgets significantly, and channeling more resources into agencies that back high-risk, high-reward tech projects. The General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, the Due Diligence Directive, DDD, and the Packaging and Packaging Waste Regulation, PPWR, which are considered high regulatory and administrative burdens by the report, hamper competitiveness of small and medium-sized EU businesses and must be adjusted to ensure a level playing field when confronted with giants such as Google and Amazon. Another major case study found within the report is in cars, a sector in which domestic manufacturers' factories are also struggling to compete with heavily subsidized Chinese electric cars. A comprehensive approach is needed, covering all stages of car production, from research and mining to data, manufacturing, and recycling, Draghi argues. Thirdly, massive investments will be essential to the success of the industrial strategy. Draghi considers the bloc needs both public common debt and private investment of 750 to 800 billion euros per year. That's up to 5% of the EU's total GDP. 450 billion euros of this would go towards the energy transition, the remaining for digital defense and innovation. As a comparison, that is more than double the 1-2% of GDP that was spent annually during the Marshall Plan from 1948 to 1951. Inspired by the COVID recovery plan, Next Gen EU, the document calls for joint EU borrowing. To achieve private investment, the report also advocates for the integration of Europe's capital markets and a full implementation of the single market, enabling high household savings to be channeled into productive investment within the EU. You are hearing the weekly Paul Show with Tobias Sika, and this week's episode is on Mario Draghi's report on the future of European competitiveness. Draghi's report on the future of European competitiveness was received as expected by the different European actors. It was acclaimed and well-received within Brussels circles and at the European level. In Brussels, in fact, some of Draghi's recommendations have already found their way in Ursula von der Leyen's political program. Draghi's push for a new debt insurance is traditionally a no-go for Germany and the Netherlands. Germany, one of the EU's most frugal member states, reacted via its federal finance minister, Christian Lindner, who immediately opposed the idea to push for a new debt insurance. Von der Leyen, the EU's commission president, did not back it either. You are hearing the weekly Paul Show with Tobias Sika, and this week's episode is on Mario Draghi's report on the future of European competitiveness. I think Draghi pinpoints exactly the EU's geopolitical and economic snags by clearly expressing a lack of European growth and systemic hurdles in commercial innovation, and conveys conspicuous ways to address the problem. Europe is indeed at crossroads, and sole member states cannot act on their own in facing the geopolitical, competitive, and rival world we're living in today against big actors such as China, Russia, and the US. Furthermore, while advocating trade and cooperation with its foreign compatible partners, the EU should also assure its own economic and geopolitical security by deepening cooperation and implementing majority vote aiming at increasing Europe's efficiency and rapidity to react. Draghi's report is a unique opportunity to address today's challenges, and I think almost all of the report's key measures are well thought and address the issue at its fundamental roots. However, one thing I disagree with in Draghi's report is suggesting treating mechanism to allow some like-minded member states to move forward together, whereas I think all of the EU should move coordinately and jointly to avoid partial input efforts being diluted and split among a few member states instead of EU rules applying to all. The real influence and test for the European Statesman's report will be in the informal European Council on November 7th in Budapest, in which Draghi will present his recommendation to the Council. A second and more concrete signal on how seriously the report will be taken will come during negotiations on the next Multiannual Financial Framework, or MFF, that will shape the EU budget for the period 2028-2034. This is it, folks. I hope you appreciated my political podcast today, and I am looking forward to having you for next week's show. A special mention to one of my best friends, Sara Candelaro, who, with her jewelry startup, is part of the 23 million companies across the EU, and who, like millions of other Europeans, could benefit from the economic implementation of Draghi's report. If you have any questions or would like to submit ideas of topics to cover related to current political events, write to me at tsika20@ubishops.ca. That is tsika20@ubishops.ca.